May it please the court. This case involves a city auto pound which has become notorious for the rampant theft and damage committed against towed vehicles and the pound employees' failures and refusals to provide adequate information regarding those vehicles. These abuses have been featured repeatedly in the local media. The appellants brought this case as a Section 1983 class action because only a constitutional claim adequately describes the nature of the city's abuses of the property rights of vehicle owners. The appellants have identified three main issues with the lower court's decision entering summary judgment against the plaintiffs. Number one, whether the district court applied the proper standard for summary judgment. Number two, whether the district court should have considered the adequacy of state remedies. And number three, whether the city can be held liable for theft and damage done by third parties.
Ms. Caparuso, could I begin by asking you this question? With respect to your Monell theory, I find it curious that the city of Chicago would have a policy, any kind of policy, express policy, policy inferred from conduct, that focuses only on pound six. I can't understand why, under what notion the city has decided to pick on the people whose cars get towed to that particular pound.
I wouldn't say that we have a theory on why it happens to be pound six. We only know that it is, and that this is a custom and practice we've identified specifically in relation to that pound.
Well, I certainly can understand that you have a lot of evidence that there are a lot of individual people who are doing the wrong thing. Certainly for summary judgment purposes, you've got plenty of evidence that the employees at pound six and perhaps others are not doing what they should be doing. But we need another step, of course, as you well know, before there's Monell liability. We need it to be an actual policy of the city, and that's where I think the district court was concerned that you had not made that showing.
Well, I do not believe the district court's decision was based on the issue that you've identified, which is that we focused on one pound rather than on all city pounds that towed vehicles.
Right, but he does say, look, 1% of the cars towed over the year, even if we assume that every single one of them was damaged or vandalized or crushed because of the things that happened at pound six, it's such a small number over the huge number of cars that get towed to that pound. How can you say it's a policy?
Well, I believe that taking the facts in a light most favorable to the plaintiffs, that though when you put it in terms of percentages, and of course there's a dispute about what percentage it is because there were claims or at least reports relating to the pound destroyed during some of the period of time that's included in this lawsuit.
Let's suppose 2%. Let's
right.
Double it. I mean, still it's a very small number.
The judge did not identify what number it would be that would be necessary to reach the level of a customer practice, but when you look at the raw number, which is 1,400 claims within less than a four-year period, we believe taking the facts in light most favorable to the plaintiffs that would be sufficient to establish their customer practice. It couldn't be every single car. I actually don't know the number of pound employees there are, but assuming that the number is not great, under a constant custom and practice of theft and damage, pound employees or third parties, depending on the standard of liability here, could not get to every single car because the car numbers are so high. But it is a significant number. We've identified as at least one per day. We also introduced evidence of individuals who had testified or submitted affidavit testimony that when they discovered that there was theft and damage to their car, that they had to stand in a long line of at least 25 to 30 people because so many people were complaining of theft and damage to their cars, which does seem to indicate that it does happen more than once per day. And we haven't fully identified the total number of claims. It could quite very well be more than the 1,400 that have been produced to us by the city. We had another individual who said that every single car surrounding his in the lot had its windows smashed. So we did present evidence that this was a substantial number, even though when it's presented in the terms of a percentage, it might not seem as large as viewing it in terms of the actual raw number, which is 1,400 claims in a four-year period. which we believe is substantial enough to at least present a genuine issue of material fact as to whether there's a custom and practice of theft and damage at the pound.
Is it your view that it would be enough to hold the city liable if you could show that the city was negligent in operating Pound 6?
I would not describe the standard of as far as whether...
Just as a hypothetical matter. I mean, I'm just saying, as a matter of law, do you think you've satisfied your burden if you've shown they were negligent, or do you agree that you actually have to show that they intend somehow, or they're at least deliberately indifferent, which is a higher standard than negligent,
right,
to the integrity of the cars at Pound 6?
Are you assuming that the damage is being done by third parties or by Pound 6?
Anybody. Maybe
themselves.
They're negligent because they don't have a good security system. Maybe they're negligent because they're not as careful as they should be looking at the background of the employees. Just my mm-hmm. point goes to the culpability standard.
It, under the assumption that Pound employees are committing the theft and damage, it is not our position that all we need to demonstrate is that the city was negligent. We have agreed in the brief that the standard would be deliberate indifference by the city to the theft and damage occurring at the Pound. On the issue of third parties, assuming that it was only third parties that were committing the theft and damage, we haven't really had an argument about what the standard of liability would be in that circumstance. But I believe our position would be that mere negligence would not be enough in that circumstance, but it's unclear under DeShaney what the standard would be in that situation if it was third parties. But as far as...
You're not arguing that the city's an insurer, vis-a-vis third parties, you're not arguing that the city's an insurer of the cars, that even if one thief slips in through the fence, the city's liable. That's not your position?
That's not our position. Since this is a Section 1983 case, I believe we still have to establish some sort of policy or custom as relates to third parties, which would be something like deliberate indifference, but more than negligence.
Okay.
It is apparent from reading the lower court's decision on this matter, this issue of third parties versus Pound employees committing the theft and damage, that the court took the disputed factual assertions by the city as true and drew all inferences against the plaintiff, which was in violation of Reeves versus Anderson Plumbing Products. And on this issue of the applicability of the summary judgment standard and the inferences that were drawn against the plaintiff, the city has not really attempted to argue in its brief to dispute the appellant's argument. The city's main defense of this case, as you can see from the briefs at the lower court level, was that the theft and damage to plaintiff's vehicles was not caused by Pound employees, and this defense has apparently now been waived on appeal. And instead of determining whether the plaintiffs had presented a genuine issue of material fact as to whether the theft and damage was committed by Pound employees or by third parties, which was hotly disputed, the court simply adopted, without question, the city's allegation that it understood that the overwhelming majority of thefts at the Pound were caused by third parties, and then inferred that the theft and damage to plaintiff's vehicles must therefore have been caused by those third parties. The court made this assumption regarding the identity of the perpetrators, despite the fact that it had granted the plaintiff's motion to strike this allegation by the city, despite the fact that the city did not present any evidence tying a third party to any of the theft and damage claimed by the plaintiffs, and despite the fact that the plaintiffs had presented strong evidence that the theft and damage was caused by Pound employees. This evidence included the inaccessibility of the Pound from the outside, the theft of large and heavy items from the Pound, the use of keys to open the doors and trunks of vehicles, and the city's post-lawsuit attempts to curtail theft by Pound employees. The court also assumed that the Pound employees did not have a custom of denying that vehicles were at the Pound and concluded that the information regarding the vehicles of the two plaintiffs who were offered as representatives of the subclass...
Counsel?
Yes.
I'm puzzled by why this litigation is in federal court under a rule after Monell that makes it very hard to succeed against the city, rather than in state court under a theory of bailment, where the city is indeed absolutely liable. One of the consequences that I can see of this litigation is that if any of the class members attempts to sue on a bailment theory in state court, they'll be met with a claim of res judicata, because all claims that could have been made should have been made, and it will be too late for them. And it looks very much to me like the main consequence of this litigation might be to immunize the city against the real principal source of liability, the bailment claim.
I did not make the initial decision to file this case, so I can't speculate as to the reasons why it was filed in federal court versus state court. And there hasn't been any... we have discussed the possibility of bailment as to whether it's an adequate state law remedy and whether the adequacy of state law remedy has even been considered.
Why is one thinking about bailment as an adequate state law remedy? That's the plaintiff's real claim. The city is actually absolutely liable as a bailee. And the claim doesn't seem to have been made. Right? This is litigation on the barest of threads, given Monell, and given the fact that the bailment claim is probably going to defeat the merits anyway, even if they were to be reached, without raising what seems to be a slam-dunk theory on which the plaintiffs could win.
It is unclear to me, looking at the case law, whether bailment is the slam-dunk theory that you describe it to be.
But surely it's at least as good a theory as the Monell theory, and if you had started out with the Monell theory, there is supplemental jurisdiction in the federal court for state law theories, assuming, you know, we're way back at the beginning. Hard to see why you would kind of just give it away instead of at least give it a shot, because I had the same question going to the question that you do discuss in your briefs of adequacy of state law remedies. There's bailment, and the city actually cites a case, American Ambassador Casualty Company against the city of Chicago, which looks to me like it's a pretty good indicator that there's a bailment claim here.
That case does suggest that a bailment action might be available to some class members, but the city hasn't even asserted that it would be available to all class members here, that in all the types of abuses of property rights that have been described in addition to the theft and damage. The city merely states that a plaintiff in a bailment action could sue for the return of their car if it's been withheld for a certain period of time after a denial that it was at the pound.
Your feeling is that bailment wouldn't fit into a class action?
That's certainly another issue here. Our position is that there is a custom and practice of these activities occurring at the pound, to proceed under individual bailment actions, even if they were entire, would be a slam dunk for the plaintiff, would not, would present issues that we would not encounter with a class action, because we would be able to draw inferences from what occurred to other individuals to support the suggestion that in this particular instance, what happened to the plaintiff's cars was due to the result of the city's actions or inactions. On the issue of the standard for summary judgment that was applied and the issue of whether the city had a custom of denying that vehicles were at the pound, as I stated, the court had concluded that the information regarding the vehicles of the two individuals who were offered as representatives of the subclass were incorrectly entered into pound computers. And in this circumstance, the city had not even made the allegation that in those situations, incorrect information had been entered into the computers. They had merely suggested that incorrect information may have been entered into the pound computers in that circumstance. And the court had moved to strike this allegation. And the city had also not presented any evidence beyond self-exculpatory affidavits that a pound employee had in any situation ever followed the city policies and exhausted all available means to locate a vehicle. The city's main defense to plaintiff's claims regarding pound employees' denials that vehicles were at the pound and failure of adequate notice was that the city had policies regarding searching for vehicles and sending out notices.
Caprucci, you are on the verge of using up all your rebuttal time. I don't know.
I see that.
Thank you
very much.
Sure.
However, it was undisputed that the city did not consistently follow those policies. And under such circumstances, it was error for the court to rely on those written policies in granting summary judgment. I reserve the remainder of my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Enrique.
May it please the court. Every major city tows and stores illegally parked vehicles. That practice is obviously essential, particularly after September the 11th. Plaintiffs contend that lurking somewhere in 42 U.S.C. Section 1983 and the Due Process Clause is some sort of code of auto pound procedures. This court should reject that novel contention. In their complaint, plaintiffs alleged that four types of conduct by the city violated the Due Process Clause, and the district court granted the city's motion for summary judgment as to all four claims. In their briefs to this court, plaintiffs failed to make any argument in support of two of the claims.
Wait a minute, Mr. Enriquez. It seems to me you overstate the case when you say that there's nothing in 1983 about auto pounds. Obviously there isn't, but suppose the city had a practice throughout the entire city, not just pound six, of not bothering to have any fences up, not bothering to have any security, hundreds of cars, you know, every year destroyed, vandalized, and it just said, oh, we don't care. We know this is true, and they were deliberately indifferent to this consequence of the city's forcible movement of somebody's car. Surely, at some point, the city has a practice and a custom of deliberate indifference to the property rights of those whose cars have been towed. One thing to park illegally, it's another thing to have the penalty for illegal parking being the loss of your vehicle. So somewhere there is a potential claim, whether it's in this case or not is a different question.
Sure, Your Honor. We think that ultimately, at whatever the contours of substantive due process are, and I'll address that further along in my remarks, there's a limitation, just as there is with anything. But as far as any procedures at the pound,
there could be procedures that are so defective as well. I mean, there, again, whether it's this case, whether the Monell standards are satisfied, those are more particularized issues.
Correct, Your Honor. Now, in their brief to this court, plaintiffs failed to make any argument in support of two of the four claims, the two concerning the mailing of written notices to vehicle owners. Plaintiff's failure to present any argument concerning those two claims waived them. Now, with respect to one of the two claims that they didn't waive, that's their claim that owners were told incorrectly by personnel at pound six that their vehicles were not at the pound, that one fails to survive to satisfy the Monell requirements, and the reason that it does is they've identified only three owners who they say were told incorrectly that their vehicles were not at the pound. And that certainly fails to satisfy the requirement that there be a persistent and widespread practice or a permanent and well-settled practice in order to constitute a policy that would render the city liable under Monell. Now, plaintiff,
to me, the written notice issue is beside the point, though, for the class members who actually called the pound and asked. Notice by that time somehow or another had been achieved. And for those people, they knew their car was there. They call, they say, is my car there? And they're told no. And they only find out after the car's been crushed or ruined that it, in fact, was there all along. So isn't notice, I can see why notice may not be the biggest point here.
Well, we certainly think it's not part of this case, and particularly because they identified only three owners, certainly not enough to establish the kind of widespread practice.
If it had been 1,400, would you have said it was enough to survive summary judgment?
I'm not sure about 1,400. 1,400 allegations is one thing. Certainly some large number.
So 1,400 affidavits. They go to every class member, and they
say, would probably be enough, it seems to me. They don't have that. Plaintiff's only remaining claim is that vehicles at the pound were damaged and vandalized. The city cannot be liable under that claim for a different reason. Damage and vandalism was not a city policy or custom under Monell because the city was not deliberately indifferent to it. Well before plaintiffs filed this action, the city had implemented various significant and costly measures at the pound, including the installation of fences and berms on the perimeter of the pound, informing pound personnel that they'd be fired if they stole anything or damaged any vehicles, instituting routine police surveillance of the pound, requiring pound personnel to perform routine inspections of the fence and to repair any holes in the fence immediately. Now, those measures plainly constituted serious and reasonable efforts to reduce damage and vandalism to vehicles at the pound. And those efforts alone preclude a finding that the city was deliberately indifferent to such damage and vandalism. But the city did not stop there. The city's efforts continued after plaintiffs filed this action. A month later, the city privatized the pound, turning over its operation to Environmental Auto Removal, EAR, and EAR implemented additional measures, many of them costly, including a 24-hour dog run, nightly patrols by a guard and dog team, hiring off-duty police officers to provide security, inspecting the vehicles of employees and firing those caught stealing, and inspecting tow trucks when they entered and exited the pound. Plaintiffs asked this court to ignore the measures that were taken to reduce theft and vandalism at the pound after they filed this action, including turning the operation of the pound over to EAR. But that contention is ridiculous. Indeed, if the city had done nothing after this case was filed, plaintiffs undoubtedly would now be contending that such inaction constituted deliberate indifference. Moreover, turning over operation of the pound to EAR is pertinent to the claims of all class members.
But Mr. Enriquez, I can't find it offhand, but there is someplace in the briefs a place where the letters that the city sent to people who filed administrative claims and the city then denied the claims, where the language in that letter is reproduced. And the language of that letter seems, as I recall, to say, we're denying your claim because we didn't do it. And so it seems that the city, in fact, did have a policy of refusing to reimburse people for damage done to their cars if it was the city's view that the damage was caused by third parties. Under bailment principles, of course, if that's the city's policy, that's a very problematic policy.
Well,
and it seems that that is what the city, in fact, told people who were trying to file claims.
Well, I think their contention on this case is that the city's policy of not preventing damage and theft.
I understand, but would you agree that that's what the letters say, that the city, in fact, has a policy of refusing to pay on administrative claims that are filed if the city thinks it's really some thief who broke into the lot and did it?
You know, I haven't read the claim, those forms in a long time, and I don't remember whether that's the case.
Right.
But
certainly,
if the city did refuse to pay those claims, as Your Honor mentioned, Illinois does have a bailment cause of action, and under bailment, the city would have been obligated to protect vehicles. At least at common law, bailment requires that you return over the vehicle when it's asked for, not delay it, and also to pay for all damage to the vehicles. And there's no indication of who committed the damage. The city would have been obligated to do that, at least under common law.
Could a class action have been brought in state court on that ground, aside from the fact that I know you opposed it here as well, unsuccessfully?
Well, it seems to me that a class action might well have been filed in state court on that ground. I don't see it. We argued in our brief that nothing would have prevented our opponents from filing a class action. They didn't respond in their reply brief at all to that point. Now, turning over operation of the pound to EAR is pertinent to the claims of all the class members, including those whose cars were towed to the pound before EAR began operating it. That's because turning over the operation of the pound was part of the string of measures designed to reduce damage and vandalism. And that string of measures, viewed in its entirety, shows conclusively that the city was not deliberately indifferent at any point during the four-year period at issue. Now, even assuming that the city policy was sufficient to satisfy, that any of the city's policies was sufficient to satisfy Monell, summary judgment was properly entered against plaintiffs. They did not establish a deprivation of procedural or substantive due process. As plaintiffs concede, it would not have been practicable for the city to implement protective pre-deprivation procedures because there was no way for the city to know when any employee would tell a vehicle owner that her vehicle is not at the pound, or for the city to know when a vehicle would be damaged or vandalized. In other words, there was no pre-deprivation procedures that the city could have given such owners. That means that the instances in which these things happened at the pound were random and unauthorized. It also means that plaintiff's claims are not really procedural due process claims, particularly in light of the adequacy of post-deprivation remedies in Illinois, which plainly satisfy due process. That leaves only substantive due process, but the Supreme Court has held that municipal conduct violates substantive due process only if it is utterly conscience-shocking. It might have been conscience-shocking if the city had...
Well, there's another more important requirement. There has to be a fundamental right at issue. And although it's possible that an automobile is a fundamental right in Southern California, it's certainly not in Chicago.
Now,
it's just money, or money is worth. You can go and buy another.
Even beyond that hurdle, assuming that for some reason a car was that type of right, it might have been conscience-shocking.
Supreme Court is about to hold that the Due Process Clause covers life, liberty, or automobiles.
Now, getting past all those hurdles, their claim still would fail. Their substantive due process claim would fail because it's simply not conscience shocking. It might have been conscience shocking if the city had directed personnel at the pound to do these things, to damage vehicles, to steal from them. But the city didn't do that. And in Collins v. Harker Heights, the Supreme Court said that even deliberate indifference is not conscience-shocking, even if this court believes that the city's conduct with respect to the pound constituted deliberate indifference. That conduct plainly was not conscience-shocking and plainly could not satisfy substantive due process. For these reasons, we ask the court to affirm the judgment of the district court granting summary judgment in favor of the city.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Caparuso?
I'd like to note that one of the errors that we noted in the district court's decision was on an issue that was raised very early in appellee counsel's argument, which is that it was error for the judge to assume that the individuals that were presented as representatives were the only individuals who had experienced the difficulties and the damage to their property that they had described. In our statement of facts, we had presented those as typical, and the city had disputed that and claimed that they were the only individuals that had experienced those issues, but the city had never demonstrated that they were the only one, and they should have been required to do that under summary judgment standards.
How would they prove that?
By an analysis of the claims, by saying that within those 1,400 claims, these are the only two individuals that had experienced problems of this kind. And all they did was assert that they were, but they did not demonstrate it, and that should have been their burden under Reeves.
I still don't understand how they would have done it.
I'm sorry?
How would they have proven the negative?
I believe they would have proven the negative by an assertion, much like the affidavit that was presented by plaintiff's counsel in the appeal, that the claims were reviewed, that each of the 1,400 claims were reviewed, and these are the only two complaints of that type.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.